Hit record. All right, we're recording. Welcome everybody to our weekly Course in Miracles group. And I am so excited that you all are here. I missed you all last week. And let's begin with coming into a brief period of meditation. So if you are able, allowing your eyes to close and turning your attention from without to within. Although it might not seem like it, your mind knows where to go. Within you is your connection to the Holy Spirit, to God. Within you is this love and light that is given you to shine into the world. And although it might seem like a lot of willingness, it's really only a tiny willingness to just step back and allow our minds to be guided, to be led into this space within. Even if you notice busyness on the surface of the mind, just imagining that you are sinking down and inwards into the core of your being. And joining with the Holy Spirit in a holy instant. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Spirit in charge tonight by our request. And taking a nice mindful breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Welcome everybody. So nice to see you all. Hello, everyone on the phone, everyone who's here but has their camera off. Glad you all are here. Hello, hello. It's so good to see you all. So we will be reading tonight Cameo 11, which is the notes on sex. And so if you can find your way to page 1749, we shall begin. I just had sriracha sauce, so you'll have to excuse me if I keep clearing my throat. I should not eat that right before going live on our call here. So just to put this into context, it says our first sentence is after she had received a lengthy discourse on sex, and the footnote directs us back to chapter 1, Miracle Principle. I think that's 46. There's two sections underneath the Miracle Principles early on in chapter 1 that talk about sex. This cameo does not directly, we don't read that section. So if you're interested, you can go. I don't think we're going to have time because I considered that, but there's enough pages here that I think we're just going to stick with the cameo. And eventually, perhaps when we get back to reading the text, we can read it then. But you can easily find it if you just want to go to chapter 1 and look under those miracle principles if you want to read about that. So that's just putting a little context around this. And let's go ahead and begin. So Cameo 11, the notes on sex. After she had received a lengthy discourse on sex, Helen paused to express her doubts about the validity of the material she had just taken down. So this is Helen's note. Bill, I got very uneasy here and thought maybe I was just writing all this which has been very time-consuming and quite irksome at times because I was jealous. I'm still not sure and need your help about this, but I went on anyway because it did not seem finished. Please help me evaluate it because I don't want scribal errors to enter too much into the course, though I guess they'll be corrected when they do. What do you think about all this? I hadn't intended to write a commentary on sex. And then there's a little thing in parentheses that says, see the star above. It just occurred to me that the doubt may come from something I don't want to give up. Should I tell you about it? It's kind of embarrassing, really. But I just remembered the One More River with which this started. The recent, and it says in brackets, the recent discussions of sex began with, tell Bill the One More River is related to sex. And we actually read about that in a previous cameo. It was, if you remember, Bill misheard it as one more rivet, as if it was like one more barrier to get to whatever it was. If we were talking about the holy instant, I'm not exactly, my memory's a little fuzzy. But anyway, that's what Helen just wrote. So let's read the commentary. Helen's sincerity is unmistakable. She is completely transparent here in her uncertainty and self-questioning, her desire to keep the course free of her influence, and her appeal to Bill for help. On the one hand, she suspects that all of this commentary on sex is just the bubbling up of her own jealousy, and in parentheses it says, in relation to Bill. Yet, on the other hand, the material seems to have a life of its own. And in parentheses, quoting Helen, I hadn't intended to write a commentary on sex, making it seem as if it's coming from beyond her. She just can't discern where the material is coming from, and so she's asking Bill to help her sort it out. Students of A Course in Miracles have been gripped by the same question since 2000, when the text became public, and along with it, the notes on sex. Since this material is absent from the familiar Foundation for Inner Peace version, the presence of it in the text came as quite a surprise. Students faced a crucial question. Is this material valid, or is it a product of Helen's biases? Little did they know that Helen had faced the same question before they did. The first discussion of sex comes quite early, just after Miracle Principle 18. This fairly brief discourse, 260 words, is the foundation for what comes after. It announces many of the main themes that are repeated later and is then referenced twice in later discussions. And in parentheses, I told you before that many are born who have not been reborn. We said before that all real pleasure comes from doing God's will. Helen seems to have had problems with the first discussion. As soon as it was done, she said, "This upsets me." Jesus' response is telling. "Sometimes I can get through anyway." The implication seems to be that even though Helen was upset about what he was teaching her, he wanted to get his teaching on sex through anyway. Helen, however, chose not to dictate this first discourse to Bill to include in the text. It stayed in her notebooks. Yet now that further teachings on sex have been given, Helen's brief comment about being upset has mushroomed into full-blown doubts about what has now become a miniature treatise. Yet it is important that she expresses her doubts so openly, for doing so evokes an answer. First, she herself suspects the resolution. She wonders if she is doubting the material because of something I don't want to give up. This is associated with her remembering Bill's slip about One More River, which Jesus commented on as he began this whole discourse on sex. And then in parentheses, tell Bill the One More River is related to sex. As is discussed in Cameo 8, the One More River seems to have been the one more thing standing between Bill and his release. By referencing Bill's slip and Jesus' identification of it as related to sex, Helen seems to be saying that something similar is going on with her. She suspects, in other words, that she has an attachment related to sex which is keeping her from seeing the truth of this material. I'm going to pause there for a moment. We'll keep reading. Now, I know for some of us, if we haven't read that chapter one material, this might seem a little bit like, what does it say about sex? What is, you know, the content of what's given? And we talked about that a couple weeks ago a little bit. But one of the main things that stands out to me from it is talking about sexual impulses as distorted miracle impulses. So miracle impulses, these pure loving impulses, are trying to get through our consciousness all the time. They're wanting to bubble up and be expressed outward. But because of all of our layers of fear, those miracle impulses as pure miracle loving impulses get distorted and they come out as sexual impulses. Now, even just hearing that, we might immediately be like, wait a second, I don't know about that. And we might feel some resistance to it, but this is curious because Helen is saying that, like, you know, maybe this is about something that I don't want to give up. And so even just hearing me saying that one bit about what's in chapter one, if we do notice any resistance come up, that's just an opportunity to just simply look at that with the Holy Spirit. Before I continue reading, is there anybody who has a comment or a question so far? We're still sort of getting into it all. We have a few more pages to go. I guess we're good. All right, I'll keep reading. Okay, so I just ended with, she suspects, in other words, that she has an attachment related to sex, which is keeping her from seeing the truth of this material. So here we go. These suspicions are suggestive, but what really answers her doubts is a comment from Jesus. There is a stray notebook page which is found over 150 pages later in her notebooks, but which must have been misplaced because it is clearly the answer to her question. You will recall that she said, I hadn't intended to write a commentary on sex. Then after that, she wrote, see star above. The asterisk is clearly a reference to this exchange on that stray notebook page. And here's the asterisk. This morning, this was slightly corrected by Jesus to read, God knows I hadn't intended to write a commentary on sex. Answer, he does indeed. The meaning of this correction from Jesus hits one immediately on an intuitive level. Helen's original comment, I hadn't intended to write a commentary on sex, already suggested the possibility that the impetus for this dictation came from beyond her. Now, Jesus's corrected version intensifies that. He has Helen say, God knows I hadn't intended to write a commentary on sex, and he then answers, he does indeed. This clearly frames God as the knowing one in the process and Helen as the innocent channel. Think of how you would interpret a similar statement about something you did. If, for example, you said, God knows I hadn't intended to buy A Course in Miracles at the bookstore that day, and then Jesus responded, he does indeed, you would have no doubt of the point of Jesus's remark. Jesus's correction then is an unmistakable answer to Helen's doubts about this material. As such, it is extremely important. It settles this whole question of the validity of the teachings on sex. It is also part of a pattern. It is in line with the suspicions Helen herself voices here that her doubts about the material may come from something I don't want to give up. It is also similar to the brief exchange she had with Jesus after the first discourse on sex, where she said, this upsets me, and he said, sometimes I can get through anyway. In both that case and this, we have a discourse on sexuality followed by Helen voicing discomfort, followed by Jesus framing the discourse as coming from beyond her. Helen's discomfort with this material, however, apparently did not go away. With each editing pass, she took more of it out until there was essentially nothing left. Some of the teaching on sexuality in her notes did not even make it into the urtext, including the foundational discourse after Miracle Principle 18. By the time we get to the Hewlin Casey version, often called the HLC, which is the version prior to the first edition of the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, what was originally 3,300 words on sex has been cut down to about 300. And even in this, the word sexual has been replaced with the more general physical. As a result, the original approximately 60 references to cognates of the word sex, like sex, sexual, psychosexual, have been reduced to a single aside, which is, and the quote is, "The confusion of sex with aggression, ... serves as an example." So all that got edited down to this one single mention of sex. Finally, even the brief amount that remains in the HLC is mostly removed from the FIP edition, which does not contain a single reference to the word sex. Many students assume that this material was taken out because Helen saw it as inconsistent with the later teaching of the course. Yet in Appendix 2, we see that Helen's editing focused on stylistic concerns, not on theoretical consistency. She herself said, "I assume the attitude of an editor whose role is to consider only form and disregard content as much as possible." As we see in Appendix 2, her editing showed an across-the-board bias against specifics, so that references to concrete phenomena in the world were either removed or reworded so as to be more general. And that is exactly what we find here. References to the concrete phenomenon of sex were either removed or made more general by changing sexual to physical. Further, Helen seemed to be particularly uncomfortable with the sex discussions, as she states in her notes, giving her even more motivation to remove it. Helen's general editing tendencies, along with her specific discomfort with this topic, then, give us all the explanation we need to understand why this material was removed. And I'm actually just getting a prompt to pause, since we've been doing a lot of reading. I'll highlight that I was just absolutely fascinated to learn about a missing page, a stray notebook page in Helen's notes, that it was found in the wrong place, and that it was clearly linked to this discourse on sex and this whole thing. God knows I hadn't intended to write a commentary on sex. And it's just fascinating also really to read about the editing process and how Helen says she was uncomfortable with the topic, and that with each editing pass, more and more of it disappeared until we essentially had nothing left. But Jesus does say, and I'm just glancing ahead really quick to see if it says it, we might still read this quote, that it's something that the miracle worker must understand. Jesus uses language like that surrounding this teaching on sex. He says it's something that the miracle worker must understand. And yet we just don't see it as the material gets edited and edited. So I grew up in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition. That's the one that I studied for years and years and years. And when the urtext came out, I actually have a photocopied like binder. It's this thick binder. It's right now it's in use on my nightstand because it lifts my alarm clock up high enough so I can see it. I don't actually read from it anymore, but I had to have it when it came out. And I remember we were all like, oh my gosh, like there's like material in the course on sex. And it was just mind blowing because, you know, there was no mention of it in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition. So that's just always why I've been so fascinated in this earlier material to see what has been taken out, because as we've talked about so many times, it's just all so relatable. Everything that Helen and Bill talk to Jesus about on a personal level is very relatable to us as well. So that piece about Helen's editing has often been, you know, kind of a sticking point for some people, feeling that Helen did edit too much. And yet other people argue that, well, aside from that, you know, she really, really tried to stick to just guidance in terms of what to, you know, keep in the course and what to remove. So those are just a few thoughts. Does anybody have any comments or questions so far, either about what we're reading or just...
I have a little comment. Sure. I actually had an experience this week. So I work with people and I talk a lot about the course, and I have someone who just started to read it, and he really loved the idea of the course in general, but then he started to read it and he gets to Miracle Principle 18, I think it is. And it says something about homosexuals, right? Homosexual tendencies. And so you also have this Christian terminology, which would be a great turnoff already. Mm-hmm. And then you get this line about homosexual tendencies. I couldn't get him past that resistance. It was just like, no, he was just like, no.
Well, I, in one sense, I don't blame him. I mean, had this been my first exposure to A Course in Miracles, I may have done the same thing. So that's, I think, what the editors of this purple edition had wrestled with, is that, gosh, this is tough. And it's like right there in the beginning. And, you know, is this kind of a good idea? And to be totally honest with you, that's been a hesitation for me to want to be like, hey, get this edition as like the first edition without, I really think that it's worthwhile to, you know, if you know somebody personally who's getting into the course and has this edition, to be able to say like, hey, like, let's just talk for a second about like the Christian language and the fact that it's going to talk about sex early on. And I feel that that early material on sex is very, very, very open to misinterpretation, because number one, back, we don't use the term homosexual anymore, because that is the term that used to be, do I even have it right next to me? The class that I teach is on the DSM, which is diagnosis. And in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, a mental disorder used to be homosexuality. And that was removed in 1981. Like, that's very recent. So that word homosexual is not used now. You know, it's a negative, it's a word that has a negative connotation to it because of the label. And so the fact that that's in the course, because that was the acceptable term back then, is problematic. Plus, you know, it does say something about sex having a, you know, more natural potential for bringing children into the world, but that anybody can misuse sex. It's very, very open to misinterpretation. So that's, I hear you. Like, that's my concern too about that in chapter one, like right from the get-go. So
yeah. Well, thanks for relating. Cause
yeah, I totally relate. And you know, here's the thing though, is that I truly believe that if the course has picked somebody, or like if somebody has like, you know, heard something in the course that has opened something in their mind, even, you know, we can find issue with it in many ways, not just with the sex material, but like you just said, the Christian terminology or the masculine pronouns or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. We can find an issue with whatever we want to find. But if there's an opening that happens in our minds because of the course, that's not going to go away, and something is going to call us back. So I have to go back into a place of trust that if this is that person's pathway, that they will be willing to at least overlook some things in the beginning while they're getting into some of the other material, and then maybe going back and re-exploring that.
So true. And that really has been my path in so many people, where I literally got the book, sold it, got the book again, sold it. It's just like, until at some point I was like, okay, I guess it's meant to sit on this lap for good.
That's awesome. Thank you for that, Daniel. I appreciate you saying that, because this, I think, is a really important thing that we all as course students need to be aware of, especially if we're recommending, you know, this to a friend, and maybe it's worth having a conversation, you know, about that. So
yeah,
thank you so much. Yeah, thanks. Andrea, hi.
I have a question. You know, it says in here that the original 3,300 words on sex has been cut down to 300 and then nothing. Is that original 3,300 words on sex in this CNE edition, or is it only in the Ur text?
The CE, I believe it's all in this edition. Yes, because okay. you'll see it's paragraphs.
So okay,
I've not counted the words, but I'm pretty positive. I'm pretty positive it's all here, because actually we can confirm that, because at the very end of this cameo that we're going to read, Robert Perry and Greg Mackey are going to say how they struggled. They wanted to take it out also, but they left it in. So we're going to read that. So we'll get confirmation that it's there. Yeah. It's a great question, Andrea.
Does it say in here like where it is in this edition, or do we have to kind of go back and look for it?
Yes. It doesn't say the page number, but it says it's under Miracle Principle 18. And then it comes up again. I'd have to look more closely. Yes.
I found it. And it's what it's saying on sexuality. Homosexuality is lacking in love only to the extent it is based on the principle of exclusion. But it's also saying that about heterosexuality. Heterosexual attitudes can be similarly distorted, but do contain a more natural potential. This sex relations are intended for having children? I mean, I totally get that, but that's not the, is this sort of saying that that's the only reason you should have sex? Or am I misinterpreting that? I mean,
it'd
be interesting to really get into this.
This is my attempt at staying at the cameo was because I was avoiding.
Oh. Oh well.
So, no, it's okay. I fully expected that we were going to go here, because how can we avoid it? Because it's reading the cameo. You're like, what does it say? So what page are you on?
10. Chapter 1, page 10.
Let's find both locations really quick, just so people know where.
46 also, page 38.
So page 38 and page 10?
Yes.
10 and 38? Okay, so everybody knows it's on page 10 and page 38. So you're on page 10, Paul?
And that's Miracle Principle 18 on page 10.
Okay. So first I have to do a disclaimer. I just want to pause here for a second. A Course in Miracles is not pro heterosexuality or anti-gay or anything like that. I don't see it that way at all. And I just need to say that for anybody listening, because love is love is love is love. And that is period. That's it. So I just want to put that out there first, because we need to keep that in mind as we are reading this. Otherwise, if we have something else in our mind, like, you know, guilt or shame or something, it can start to make us think that this is saying something else. So yes, so whether you're gay or straight, sexuality is lacking in love only to the extent that it's based on the principle of exclusion. Everybody should love everybody. So in other words, we are meant to love everybody equally. And I've heard people quote this to justify free love, like sleeping with anybody that you want. And I don't think that that's what this is saying. Yeah. I don't think that's what this is saying at all. I think it's saying that literally we are being asked to love just as much as you love your children. Can we love every single other being in this world with that same love? Like, that's like a high, you know, a high state of love for everything. So that's what it's asking us to do, in terms of everybody should love everybody.
Do we have a understanding of what the principle of exclusion is?
Based on the principle of exclusion. You know, it goes on to say, it's wrong to deny the beauty of some souls because of body structures of which you are afraid. I don't know exactly what that's referring to. I'm trying to remember the commentary. And if anybody's a member of Course Companions or took a workshop with Robert Perry and Emily Bennington on this part of the book, please feel free to chime in. But I mean, principle of exclusion is what? Specialness. Like, I'm going to love you, but not you. And that's what comes to mind for me.
I believe that's what it is, too. The special relationship rather than
love. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thanks, John.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know what the body parts, body structures of which you are afraid. I don't know what that's exactly referring to, but that's what came up for me for exclusion. So thank you.
Hey, Corinne.
Yes.
Hi, it's Cheryl. Wanted to like give a little input on what I was thinking about while you were reading this stuff and while everyone was commenting.
Sure.
I think that what you were just saying there, and I can't quote it back to you, but the last thing you said, I think it's about us judging each other for, like sexual attraction, and the exclusion is like, we choose to love and not love people based on our attraction to them. And so we're making some people special. Mm. And those the people we're making special are the ones that we may be attracted to and want to have sex with. Mm-hmm. And the other people, we're putting them at a different level for love, saying like, I love this person more because I'm having sex with them and they're my partner. And I don't love everyone else the same. And so I think there's a few things going on there where, I don't know, it made sense in my head, but it's really hard to communicate it. But I don't see it as being homophobic or anything like that, or pro-heterosexual. I just think that when they're talking about having that sex for having children, I think it takes the judgment out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anything I just said made sense, but
yeah, no, thank you. Thank you, Cheryl. I agree with you that it can be hard to try to put some of this into words, but I really appreciate your input.
Okay.
It makes sense to me. I'm with you. And to build off of that, so this thing that Paula brought up about, the natural potential sex relations are intended for having children. If you think about it, I mean, it's referring to like, there's gotta be a physical act for that to happen. Like there's gotta be something that happens there, but we're all prone to the same error of, like you were just saying, Cheryl, whoever, you know, you're sexually attracted to, like that you love them more, that it turns into a special relationship. So I take that as there's a physical act that has to occur to bring more bodies into the world. I was just talking to somebody about, they were like kind of like riffing on birthing bodies. And they were like, somebody referred to it as making more skeletons. I just thought it was so kind of gruesome, but funny. And just, I have a twisted sense of humor sometimes. So that's a random aside, but Paula, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but that's how I read that children stuff, that there's gotta be a physical act to enable that to happen. But everybody, whoever you love, we're all prone to the same error of misusing sex for specialness. Yeah.
Thank you, that's Thank clarifies. You, Paula.
Okay, good.
Hey, Corinne.
Yes, hi, Courtney.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, I just, I think, maybe a clarifying question or statement for me would be like this idea that the world, the ego created this world as a replacement for God. And like sex was kind of created by the ego, right? To kind of mimic this feeling of a miracle, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe like, and also like creation in this world of new bodies is also an illusion because we're all, you know, one. Right. Would you mm-hmm. like say that is true as well?
100%. Yes. I'm with you that those types of things are substitutions mm-hmm. for the truth. So we're creating bodies as a substitute for the fact that actually what we really want to do in terms of creation. So to distinguish between creating and making, we would make bodies because all we can do down here on this level is make real creation involves, you know, extending the love that we are, extending the truth. So you're absolutely right that these things are substitutions for things that occur in reality. It's the ego's version. And I love that. I love that you brought that up.
And he also draws this, if I may say, this picture of, you know, he wants us to be miracle workers, and there's this the miracle impulse, which, you know, is about really joining in a true way with your brother, whereas then it can get distorted into a sex impulse and be a joining of bodies rather than minds.
Think about how many spiritual teachers, like gurus, I'm talking like spiritual, and I'm thinking specifically of men just because I don't know any female examples, but there are these gurus that are attaining these, like, you know, higher states of consciousness. And how many have we now learned about that have succumbed to their sexual desires and, you know, abused their students and done all sorts of horrible, you know, things. So that just came to mind.
Great example.
Yeah. Thank you, Daniel. And I have, Courtney, when you were saying hi, I just have to let you know, I paused for a second because I got sidetracked. Tracy and Mike, you posted in the chat something that I think is just hilarious that Ken Wapnick has said, and it's bodies don't join, they rub, which just cracks me up. The first time I heard that Ken Wapnick said that, I was like, oh my gosh, that is so true. They don't join, they rub. Oh, John.
You know, I know Helen had a real problem with sex and her attraction to Bill and whatnot, but I'm really surprised that she didn't ask Jesus, have you ever had sex? That would have been like at the top of my list. It's like, well, what do you know about this? It's like, how do you know? You know, and I mean, I'm really curious to that question, which can't be answered unless I can ask him. But, you know, I don't know that I'll get an answer. But I've always been kind of wondering.
Oh, John, that's like a question on the same level of, like, you know, a genie gives you three wishes and you wish for three things. And then you realize after the fact that you should have wished for more wishes. It's like, oh, damn, I had this chance. Helen could have asked that question. Jesus. I love that. That's great. Thank you. Oh, excellent. Any other comments or questions before we keep reading? Okay, so let's flip back. So everybody has the places in the beginning of the course where it's talking about sex. So we can flip back to where we were reading, which is in the cameo. We are on page 1751. And we still have a little bit more to go. So we'll do some more reading now. We're on the top of page, wait. No, I think I'm on the wrong page. Did we leave off? I think I have where we left off. Are we on the bottom of page 1752, the very, very last two lines? Is that okay? Perfect. Thank you. All right. So I'm going to back up one little short paragraph. We left off with it saying Helen's general editing tendencies, along with her specific discomfort with this topic, then give us all the explanation we need to understand why this material was removed. Okay. So moving on. Is this material inconsistent with the later course? Rather than making hasty assumptions, this is a question that needs to be carefully examined. In this examination, what is especially striking are the many parallels between the early teaching on sex and the later course teaching on special relationships and the body. The early teaching that sexual pleasure is not truly pleasurable in itself is mirrored by the course's later teaching that physical pleasure is ultimately painful, for it identifies us with the body. The early teaching that in sex we view another as a sex object is mirrored in the later criticism that in romantic relationships we view others as mindless bodies. And the quote is, "For relationships to the ego mean only that bodies are together, and it does not object where the mind goes or what it thinks, for this seems unimportant." The early teaching that sex is not for achieving closeness. It says you have misunderstood sex because you regard it as a way of establishing human contact for yourself. is mirrored in the later teaching that sexual union does not establish real closeness. And the quote is, the union of bodies thus becomes the way in which you would keep minds apart. Another early teaching, the early teaching that sexual attraction itself must be undone. The quote is, the underlying mechanism must be uprooted, is mirrored in the later idea that we must get beyond attraction to bodies. And the quote being, when the body ceases to attract you. Finally, the practical instructions for dealing with sexual attraction and fantasy are strikingly similar in both the early dictation and the later course. In chapter one of the text, we are told that in a situation where you experience inappropriate sex impulses, you should invite me, Jesus, to enter, and then he will replace it, the sexual attraction, with love. In chapters 16 and 17, we are told that whenever your thoughts wander to a special relationship which still attracts you, you should allow Jesus to enter and step between you and your fantasies. And then the Holy Spirit will release you from your sexual attraction. This pattern could hardly be more similar. I'm going to pause here because that was just a lot. So here we are given 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different instances of quotes from this early material on sex in chapter one that was edited out, and how it still is in alignment with teachings from later on in the course that I'm assuming were not edited out. So these early teachings are that sex itself is not truly pleasurable. In sex, we view another as a sex object. Sex is not for achieving closeness. Sexual attraction itself must be undone. The underlying mechanism must be uprooted. And then finally, dealing with sexual attraction and fantasy are similar in both the early dictation and the later. So this is, again, this final one is where you experience inappropriate sex impulses, you should invite me, Jesus, to enter. So it's all about turning the Holy Spirit, turning to Jesus, no matter what. And when I say, you know, I talk a lot about this in my book, but this is just like, I feel like for me, life in general, that it's my spiritual practice to hand over everything to the Holy Spirit. And that means literally everything. And it's saying that here, even turning sex over, sexual desire, to see it differently, to perhaps have those impulses be elevated, you know, to whatever higher states perhaps may come. But it's always to not, we got to be so careful, because the ego wants to get in there and make us guilty right away, you know? If you're feeling sexual attraction, there's going to be that, oh, but the Course says, and no, this is where we have to be where we are. We absolutely have to be where we are. And everything that we do, everything that comes forward is an opportunity, again, to hand it over and to be willing to see it differently, to be willing to be taught, to be willing to see everything that we think we understand in a different manner. So I just wanted to highlight what some of those teachings were in this early material that we haven't actually directly read, but we did get some of it here. It's interesting that Courtney made such a great comment before about the ego substitutions for things in truth. And that makes me think of this first one that we read, the early teaching that sexual pleasure is not truly pleasurable in itself. Here is, you know, an ego substitution, a sexual pleasure is an ego substitution for what truly makes us happy, which is doing God's will and extending love as we were made to do. Before I keep reading, any comments or questions?
I'd just like to comment. I know somewhere else in the text it says something about certain body parts too, that we tend to emphasize more, you know, look at certain body parts. And I remember I think I was talking to Robert about that one time, and I said something about, well, I'm attracted to her intelligence. And then he's like, that's just her brain. That's another body part. And I was like, oh my gosh. You know, it's like, I just can't win for losing.
That's funny. That's funny, John. Thank you so much for sharing that. So a private question came in and I just want to address it too, that like when our partner is initiating sex, you know, what do we do? And this just goes back to, again, we have to be where we are. So it's about tuning in and seeing what feels right in the moment, but always offering it all to the Holy Spirit. It doesn't mean that you're not going to do it. If you gave it over to the Holy Spirit, it might be that you still feel guided and moved to, but in inviting the Holy Spirit in, that's giving it a different purpose. So that's changing the purpose from joining separately to a transformation of sorts, some kind of transformation by changing the purpose, by repurposing it. So thanks for that. Thanks for that question. Any other comments or questions before I keep reading? Yes.
So then it's not really saying that there's anything wrong with your sexual attraction, correct?
It's not tricky. I know. It's not saying it's wrong. It's that the ego has somebody have something they want to add?
excuse me. I'm just clearing my throat, Karu. No
problem. Did you want to chime in or?
I think you do. This is Carl.
Hi, Carl.
Hi. I think you know Jennifer Hadley, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, I'm kind of thinking that I might like to go back to the days when a few years ago on Jennifer's call and somebody asked her what the course said about sex. And Jennifer said, it doesn't say anything about sex. And I know she was referring to the Foundation for Inner Peace text, which, you know, maybe she didn't have access to this material that you were reading from. And, you know, I did mention to you that, you know, Robert Perry and Emily Bennington did a show or a webinar, I guess, on, you know, what the Course says about sex a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And they were reading some of this material that you just read. And Emily said, well, if we all adhered to that, we'd all be celibate, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I just thought I'd, bring that up. You know.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. That's a good point. Yeah. So, very good point. Thank you for that. So, yes, that's a great point that we would all be celibate. So, how can it be bad? So, Paula, I just want to make sure I didn't lose your question. So, you said, I was going to emphasize that no, it's not bad. It's about recognizing that there's something deeper going on and that it can be a doorway into an even deeper loving experience than how we currently know it. So that's sort of the opening, is the repurposing, that by saying, you know, Holy Spirit, I'm inviting you into this, which, you know, if that brings up self-consciousness or feeling like a little creepy, like there's somebody else that you're, you know, inviting into the room, that needs to be looked at and seen, because again, there's no cause for guilt or for fear or self-consciousness or anything, but it is about learning how to just repurpose this, but not because it's bad. If it's the ego that's going to want to get in there and be like, so you're not supposed to do this then, but like Carl just said that point, well, then we would all be celibate and, you know, what would happen then? It can just be repurposed. There can be, it's kind of like being curious that like, what, if I hand this over to the Holy Spirit, what might something new be? What might something be that I haven't experienced before in a deeper level, you know, more love, more of a connection. So those are just some thoughts.
Yeah, it's a shame it's not worded maybe a little with more clarification, because it's certainly just the Holy Spirit will release you from your sexual attraction. Well, supposing you don't want to be released from it, you know. Right. And so, and that's where the trouble comes in with this, because then on some level, if I don't want to be released from it, I must be guilty of something. No, it's never about that.
It's never about increasing guilt, ever, ever, ever. But it is about looking at our attachments to the body.
Yeah.
So it's not about increasing guilt. It is about looking at our attachments to the body and what we don't want to let go of. So that's where, again, rather than just being willing, this is how we have to also look at our unwillingness to heal. And if I have this little area of my life right here in my hands, call it sex, call it whatever, whatever attachment it may be, that I don't want to give over because, you know, whatever that reason is, well, there's a little unwillingness, you know, to heal. There's
absolutely
a little unwillingness to have a shift in some way, shape, or form in that area. And that's what we have to look at.
And so that plays out in a lot of different ways.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, it does.
Not only just with sex. So,
no, no.
I really think it's important in at those times to request Holy Spirit's help, you know,
absolutely,
to become willing.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you, Paula.
Thank you.
And there's another. Oh, who's that?
It's John. Doesn't it say somewhere else too that the sex is completely neutral, that it's not good or bad, or not sex, but the body, I mean, is completely
neutral. Yeah, the body. Yes, it's completely neutral.
Mm-hmm. How can it be good or bad? It's
right. Yep, yep. It's totally, wholly neutral. And if we think anything in either direction, we're getting hooked again by an ego thought, which can be repurposed and seen differently. Did anybody on the phone just want to chime in? I thought I may have heard something for a moment, but maybe not.
If I can, Corinne, it's Carl again.
Hi, Carl. Yes, real quick, so we do have a little bit to read still.
You know, of course, it does say that one of the lessons is let me remember there is no sin. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, it does talk quite a bit about guiltlessness. And of course, it does say to the ego, guiltlessness is blasphemous. And, you know, Alan Watson, in that book he wrote with Robert Perry, said that, you know, the body is a communication device. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and he says, thank God, you know, he says, because a lot of the things, the Course says a lot of things, negative things about the body, but it does say it's a communication device. So, yes, you know, I guess does. In that sense, you could say that sex is a communication device, you know, in some regard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's a good point.
That's yeah.
Good point. Yeah. Thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
So
thank
much.
You.
I appreciate that. I do want to just mention that. So somebody posted in the chat, like, and I'm not sure, I might be reading this out of context, but sleep, anything else we do for fun. I want to emphasize that when I say handing something over to the Holy Spirit, I'm not saying let it go, like to not do it anymore or like get rid of it. There is always, always an exchange. So when we hand something over, we're not just releasing something into a vast void of nothingness. We're getting back a miracle in some way, be it some type of expression of love or some sort of shift or some sort of actual experience of love. It's always an exchange. So I do give my sleep, everything I do for fun. I mean, I don't always consciously do that in my head, but it's like part of my spiritual practice to just be like, take everything, like everything that I do, I'm putting it all in your hands because Corinne will just make a muck of it. So I practice handing everything over. Daniel, did you want to chime in really quick?
I just kind of to strengthen your point that I feel that, like you said, we're not sacrificing anything.
No, right.
Yeah.
That's the
and
word.
I feel like a lot of times when I read the book, like for the first bunch of years, I was feeling threatened by a lot of the things until I realized that he's trying to release me.
Yeah.
And that's a completely different way of reading it, because then you're open to it and you're like, okay, I shouldn't be scared of this. This is for good. This is for me.
Mm-hmm. So, awesome. Thank you for emphasizing that point. You hit the nail on the head with that word, sacrifice. That's what it is. It brings up fears of sacrifice, and we are not asked to sacrifice anything. Thank you, Daniel. Okay, let's finish reading. I'm at the very bottom of page 1753. We're about to start the final page. Like Helen, we may find this material uncomfortable, but the evidence that the author of the course genuinely intended it is sizable. For one, there is the sheer length of it, 3,300 words woven throughout the foundational material on miracles are not to be dismissed lightly. There is also the emphasis on it. At one point, Jesus says, "I want to finish the instructions about sex because this is an area which the miracle worker must understand." Then there is the fact that Jesus never corrected any of it. At this early point in the dictation, he would sometimes tell Helen to correct something she had misheard. She even references this in her comments above. She says, I don't want scribal errors to enter too much into the course, though I guess they'll be corrected when they do. Yet none of the material on sex was ever corrected. On the contrary, as we saw, when Helen wondered if Jesus should correct these notes, he stepped in to instead correct her doubts. This was important, not only to put those doubts to rest, but because he wasn't finished. Over 40% of the material on sex was still to be dictated. Finally, as we saw above, there are strong echoes of these notes later on in the course. The later course's teachings on physical pleasure, treating others as physical objects, quote unquote, the union of bodies, physical attraction, and the prescriptions for dealing with sexual attraction and fantasy are all markedly similar to the early teachings on sex. There comes a point at which, regardless of any discomfort on our end, we just need to step aside and let the author do what he wants with his book. It is, after all, his book. That point has clearly been reached in the case of the notes on sex. When we first started editing this version, we had a different plan. We corralled all the material on sex in one place, cut it down to less than 2,000 words, and moved it from chapter 1 to chapter 2. That way, rather than being hit with it repeatedly throughout the very first chapter, the reader would encounter just one little fenced off area in chapter 2. However, we eventually recognized what we were doing. We were attempting to override the author's wishes for his own book. We have therefore included the discourses on sex and have left them in their original order and placement. And that concludes our Cameo 11, the notes on sex. I have to tell you that after our call 2 weeks ago, I flipped the page and I saw that this was coming and I was like, oh no, I have to talk about this. But hey, it's all good. It's all good. It was a great discussion, and actually I so appreciated everything that everybody added, and that we did go back to where these instances are located in the text to explore a few things. Wonderful. Any final questions?
I just want to say kudos to Robert Perry. I mean, for connecting the earlier part on sex with later parts on the course. Just think it's a really good cameo.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is. And he has a skill like that with a very scholarly brain. Awesome. Eric just posted in the chat, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but every miracle you give and receive lessens your attraction to this world. That is spot on. We recognize with every miracle that we give and receive, there's less and less here that we realize that we want. All right. I think we're good. Thank you everybody so much for being here. And I will look forward to seeing you all next week for our next cameo. Have a great week, everyone. I love you all. Bye-bye.
Love you all.
Bye. Love you.
Yeah.
See you later. Bye-bye.